soft open with a hard start. The Mojo Rating Report with Sam Cedar. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
A soft open to a hard start. A hard start with a soft center. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. You've interneted to the internet. The internets. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
You know who just, you took that really, you dropped that out. Fell off the cliff there. You know who's freaking out right now? Or maybe not right now, because he's in California. He's not listening live. He's going to listen to a podcast. John Benjamin. John Benjamin is freaking out because that was not John Benjamin. The man who has voiced the Majority Report, Sam Cedar Show, Cedar on Sundays, and then in his spare time, Archer. That show on FX occasionally does that. And that show... what was it? Dr. Katz and Home Movies. Tons of shows. But his main gig has been the voice of the Majority Report. And unfortunately for him, he's not been working very much lately. And out of the blue, a shot across the bow. A fan of the show, Tom Cheevers, sends that in to us. And, of course, we had to play it today just because I wanted to freak Benjamin out. Right now he's listening to the podcast. He's freaking out. Thousands of people just saw how easy it is to replace John Benjamin. Tom Cheevers' website, leaveittocheevers.com. I don't even think John Benjamin has a website. He doesn't even have a Twitter account. No Facebook, nothing. all right. I got to play this. Dorsey, you haven't heard this. But Evan has. Every time John Benjamin calls me now, I smile for the first time in the 35 years I've known John Benjamin. I smile, and this is why. It's because I, some time ago, made a ringtone out of one of Myla's songs that she wrote about John Benjamin. It's a very sweet way to bring it home, isn't it? Someone just farted. In Myla's defense, when she sang and wrote that, she was not five. She was only four. She was four and a half. And now she's grown out of that phase completely to where she's only talking about getting married. Literally, she comes home every day talking about who she's going to marry. I don't know what that means. I suggest it means that I am probably doing a bad job as a father. If your daughter comes home at age five and is constantly concerned about what other boys are saying about her. So, folks, today is like day three or four of our show. We got the site. The office is pretty close to being set up. We're somewhat tricked out. Short of like a slash here and a hyphen there and a dot here, we were able to broadcast quite efficiently.
Which apparently makes all the difference.
Apparently that makes all the difference in the internet. If you have an extra S somewhere or a slash that's going in the wrong direction, just dead silence. And we're hoping within the next day or so, we are going to have figured out how to have capacity to bring in guests. So we will have guests via the phone, and soon then we'll have guests that will come into studio, and then hopefully the next step is figuring out a technology to take phone calls. Maybe that's maybe we don't have to have this conversation on air, but we're looking for some type of app that will stack phone calls that will live on our computer, and then we could mix that in and... And this is even just, this is our interim technology. Where do you see what our super technology is? This is just the one that we got for free. This entire place, it is amazing. But we have been able to set this office up. Literally, I think, I mean, looking around here, I see all just an incredible amount of technology. And I don't think it's been more than $130 that we spent on Dorsey's chair, on that bookshelf, and I think that's the only thing that's bought here. Yet we have all this amazing equipment that I stumbled onto at different times.
Fell off some trucks.
Literally, we have like 4 mixing boards around here. I got them all at yard sales, and 1 pre-bankruptcy sale. All right, so there's a couple of things I want to talk. I mean, I got some stories, and bear with me, folks. It's a slightly different medium, and it's been a while, so I'm just going to be figuring out the organization. I wasn't even going to talk about Smitty 1241. I'm not able to get you live. What are you talking about? Try it again. Dorsey, are you writing me a letter saying there's a problem? Okay. Dorsey's like fervently running around looking for a notepad. What? Oh, push the Twitter hashtag. You could just say.
Oh, okay.
Hey, if you want to IM me, you can IM me at Twitter FM. You can IM me at all the other Twitter accounts that you have of mine. And if you're on Twitter itself, hit Twitter, the hashtag Twitter FM. What?
Majority FM.
Oh, Twitter FM. What? Majority FM. Hashtag Majority FM. And our Twitter handle is Majority FM. You threw me off when you started writing in that note. So, everybody, undoubtedly, I'm not telling you anything new. Oberman was suspended on, I guess this was Thursday night.
Yeah.
And we didn't have a chance to talk about, well, we didn't find out about this until Friday afternoon, sometime during the rebroadcast of the first Majority Report ever, or at least the first one on Air America. And now I got to be careful in this situation, and probably not for the reasons you think. Obviously, I'm a big fan of Keith Olbermann's, and I appreciate him on a multitude of levels. As a broadcaster, in terms of what he does, but from a political standpoint, and for the opportunities he's given me on MSNBC, all those things. And then, and I share that with everybody, undoubtedly you're all big fans of his as well. And of course the entire premise of this thing is just a joke. And I will say this, and I'd actually be curious as to what Randy Rhodes is saying about this, because this situation, and I don't want to betray any confidences, and I don't talk to Keith Olbermann on a social level at all. I only deal with him on the show, so I'm not talking to him directly about any of this. But this situation is, in my mind, very analogous in some respects, and it's easier for me to see this in retrospect, to what happened with Randy Rhodes at Air America. There, it's not a secret that there's friction between Keith Olbermann and Phil Griffin. And now, there's 2 schools of thoughts here. One is, this is some type of political reining in because of Comcast. I don't believe that's the case at all. I'm not even convinced that Phil Griffin could tell you the political inclinations of any of the people on his show, on his network. I think he would say they're liberal or they're conservative, but I don't think that he could say, Ed Schultz sits here on the spectrum, and Keith Olbermann sits here on the spectrum, and Lawrence O'Donnell sits here on the spectrum, and Rachel Maddow sits here on the spectrum. I just don't think that that's an issue for him, one way or another. I just don't think he cares. The bottom line is numbers. And so it's not a question I don't believe has anything to do with Comcast taking over or anything else. The numbers that you would need to know to fully understand this. Well, first you have to start with this. Management are generally, I don't know if idiots is the right word. Phil Griffin's probably a smart guy. I don't know. But there's a lot of egos involved in this. Let me put it in the context of Air America. Randy Rhodes was not suspended simply because she did a stand-up routine and used a untoward word about Hillary Clinton that, in fact, she said Hillary Clinton is a whore. She didn't say Hillary Clinton is a whore as in she's like a prostitute selling sex. She said Hillary Clinton is a whore and then went on to define it because she is willing to do anything for the nomination and to sell out her principles. And she did it in the context of a comedy routine, which was, you know, attitudinal. And, you know, look, you can agree or disagree. That's not the point. The point is, you say that in a comedy club and your bosses take you off the radio. That's absurd. I was on that radio. I called a half a dozen people a whore. Honestly, Joe Lieberman, the president, there's no way I didn't call people a whore. Did I use it in terms of Hillary Clinton? I don't know. Probably her husband, maybe. I don't know. I don't remember. And on that day, Mark Green, who was the president of Air America, the self-appointed president, I think he was still president because when his brother sold the network to the new owner. That was part of some people call that a poison pill. Other people just call that a term or condition of sale. And Green comes running over to me like, "Oh, there's a big hubbub. You got to go on today." "What? No, I'm not going to." "There's a big hubbub, and there was like one diary, I think, at like my DD or something." It was like 20, 50, 100 people. And I was like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. You don't own this place anymore. I'm going to the owner. And I went to talk to the owner. Now, what? Mark Green had a problem with Randy. Many of the management had a problem with Randy there. They would say because she's overpaid. Was she overpaid? I don't think so. But that will remind me of another conversation I had with Green where we talked about that specific thing. But they would say she overpaid, she's not a team player, whatever that means when you're doing a radio show. She never showed up at the softball games. Never showed up. Did not show the proper company spirit. She never showed up to softball games. We can't have that. She was our highest rated personality on our network. By a factor of probably two. This is after Franklin left. She can't say this, blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, Mark Green thought, I think at that time in his mind, he thought that this is going to be when Hillary Clinton gets in office. This is going to be my ticket to be, you know, chairman of HUD or whatever it is, whatever delusion he was living under. You know, I'm going to be ambassador to, you know, whatever it is. Whatever he thought he was going to get out of it. And then the owner of the network, who was just the new owner, just come in, completely had no idea what he was doing. He thought that this is my way of ensuring the Obama brand or something. Because he was an Obama. So they both had diametrically opposed political agendas. I said to the guy, I said, "You can't do this. You know, it's like, does not make any sense." "Sam, this is what we're going to do. Will you go on?" I got to talk to Randy. You know, I mean, these guys were my bosses, and they were deciding whether or not they were going to fire me. They ended up deciding they were going to fire me. They just did it very slowly. But I spoke to Randy. She was okay with it when I told her what I was going to say about it. I told them what I was going to say about it. They were like, "We prefer if you didn't address it." And I said, "Well, then I can't go on." I'm willing to go on, but you can't stop me from saying what I'm going to say. And bottom line, it was all personality. And they used this as an opportunity, that suspension, as an opportunity to try and put the screws on her, because Randy embarrassed people like Mark Green. Because Mark Green didn't know what he was doing. And she would not say that in front of a group of people, because she felt like, I'm the highest rated person on this network. She probably felt, I think to a certain extent, correctly. She didn't need them as much as they needed her. And that they would never be so dumb as to fire her because she had an attitude or she was difficult to deal with. Here, this is a news flash. If you work in the infotainment or entertainment world, or probably just even the straight total news, no opinion, most of your talent is going to have some ego issues. No. All of your talent's going to have ego issues. A good portion of your talent will have other assorted idiosyncrasies. You know, like Rachel, for instance, I don't think is difficult to work with at all. I never saw that at Air America. Some people are, some people aren't. You know what it's like to work with Marc Maron? I'll tell you something. Hard. Extremely hard. Whether you're his boss or you're his producer or his show partner, it's extremely difficult. It's just that Maron's also funny. So, like, you know, if you're like a fat, radio executive from New Jersey, you're willing to put up with it because Maron tells you good sex stories. Literally, that's the dynamic. And so this is a very roundabout way of saying that I think the suspension of Olbermann, was just more of a pretext. And that if they had their way, Olbermann would have overreacted to this, would have made some stand. You notice he was not on Twitter until the thing was, until he got word that it was over on Tuesday. They were hoping that he would react to this in such a way that give them another excuse, because they could not possibly fire him for this. But this was a provocation on the part of management. And Keith played it very intelligently, laid low, which is also an indication of, you know, if a guy has that type of self-control in that situation, maybe the problem is a little bit more with management. But I will tell you, there are other numbers. Now, the normal reaction when I tell people this, and let me put it this way, this is not complete conjecture on my part. This is a story I would have had the same position on this weeks ago, months ago. This is not conjecture on my part. So the numbers, you know, people say that's impossible. That attitude would come into play when you're talking about the guy who is the number one rated guy on that, who Cenk the other day when he was filling in for him properly said built MSNBC. It was a crap box before Olbermann came into his own, essentially. There was no calculation. Hey, let's put Keith Olbermann on and see if he develops into a fire-breathing liberal. And, someday, 2 or 3 years from now, he's going to do a special comment that will completely change the dynamic of the network. That was not the plan. And I can tell you, it was not the plan. Like, now that we got Keith Olbermann, he's doing so well as a liberal, let's bring on a whole litany of others. No, that was not the plan either. It was just like, oh, wow, this woman is doing great filling in for him. She's a great guest, and she's doing great filling in for him. And Keith is leveraging his, and okay, we're going to put her on. Wow, she's a huge hit. I'm a genius. She was on liberal talk radio. Let's see, that guy. And so on and so on. There is an organic nature I would say, to the development of that show. And now I think they are have come full circle and they realize, okay, this is where our future is. MSNBC is the only network that's shown any growth recently. This is at a time where supposedly, if you're a liberal, you're in bad nobody's interested, right? Not only have they shown growth, but they do amazing well on revenues, despite the fact that they have, you know, one quarter, one third of the viewership of Fox, because there's no other place to go if you want to reach liberals. That's the other little secret about media now, folks. Niche, as in this program. There's only one place you can go if you want to hit these exact 10 people.
Yep.
The SamSederShow.com audience. There's only one place to go. That's why advertisers will break down doors. Not even accepting advertising right this moment. Maybe in 5 minutes. So the numbers that you need to know are, what is Keith Olbermann paid? I don't know what that is, but I'm sure it's a big number. And somebody's like, hey. You know, oh, the conversation I had with Mark Green about Randy, like he was still arguing this to me, like literally like a year later. And he sat down in the conversation. And I would not repeat this conversation, but for the way he prefaced it. We started talking. And I was probably also talking about Lionel too in this conversation. And he's saying to me, he says to me, we start talking. And at one point he goes, oh, hey, can we keep this confidential as employer to employee? And I'm like, what do you mean? And he goes, well, I don't want you to, you know, I know you get on the radio sometimes, or you, I don't think at that time I was on the radio, but you talk about things in clubs and this and that. And I just don't want you to repeat what I'm saying. And I said, oh, well, then no, we should stop talking now, because I can't, no, I can't agree to that. Anything I'm going to say to you, I would say in public. And he just sort of looked at me like, wait a second, that's not the way you're supposed to agree. And of course, he couldn't help himself. What he should have said at that point is, all right, well, then we're going to have to end this conversation. Thanks for stopping by, Sam. Which he perfectly could have done. But no, he had to continue to talk. And he said, Randy was not a team player. And do you know how much she cost? And I said, oh, okay, I don't know. Although I had a vague notion. But I said, okay, let's say, you know, I picked a number out of my head, which was, you know, a significant number that was not nearly what the number he was thinking about in terms of what she cost too much. I said, let's take just $500,000. Let's say that you were overpaying her $500,000, which was not the case at all. I know what people who have 100 affiliates and are the anchor to an entire network get. And it's significantly more than $500,000, or even, I think, $1 million. But be that as it may, I just said, let's just say $500,000. And he sort of smiled, like, man, that's probably more than I would have thought. And I go, what factor of $500,000 are you going to have to spend to get that clearance back? Are you going to have to spend $3 million to get that back? And then to sustain it, what are you going to have to pay? I mean, he had no answer to this because he was a moron. So the number that you have to know is, what is Keith Olbermann being paid? That's not, it's not relevant to what their revenue is ultimately, but it's relevant to the way that someone's going to try and justify that move. And the other number you have to look at is a guy like Larry O'Donnell, what kind of numbers was he doing when he sat in that chair? And what kind of numbers is he doing at 10 p.m.? Moving on from that aspect of this controversy, there was a great, Rachel had a pitch-perfect response to this. And I'm sure most of you have seen it. The thing that interests me, Rachel got on there, basically said, told everybody, this is what happened in the past. The reason why Scarborough wasn't removed is because he told, this is the process. Keith should have been suspended, but I think we all get the point, and he should be reinstated. And then she goes on to talk about this. Now, this clip that we have, she is not talking to MSNBC brass at this point. I believe this is an explicit, although technically I guess it's not explicit, But I believe she is addressing this to Jon Stewart. Because when she is talking about the false equivalency, I believe she is talking to Jon Stewart here. Let's play this clip.
I also personally believe that the point has been made and we should have Keith back hosting Countdown. Here's the larger point, though. That's going mysteriously missing from all the right-wing cackling and the Beltway, old media clucking about this. This is what I think is missing. Let this incident lay to rest forever. The facile, never true anyway, bullpucky, lazy conflation of Fox News and what the rest of us do for a living. I know everybody likes to say, oh, that's cable news. It's all the same. Fox and MSNBC, mirror images of each other. Let this lay that to rest forever. Hosts on Fox raise money on the air for Republican candidates. They endorse them explicitly. They use their Fox News profile to headline fundraisers. Heck, there are multiple people being paid by Fox News now to essentially run for office as Republican candidates. If you count not just their hosts, but their contributors, you are looking at a significant portion of the whole lineup of Republican presidential contenders for 2012. They can do that because there's no rule against that as Fox. They run as a political operation. We're not. Yes, Keith's a liberal, and so am I, and there are other people on this network whose political views are shared openly with you, our beloved viewers, but we are not a political operation. Fox is. We are a news operation, and the rules around here are part of how you know that. Before it was politically safe to do it, Keith Olbermann attracted the ire of the right wing and a lot of others besides when he brought to light and raged against what he saw as the errors and sins of the previous presidential administration. Keith was also the one who brought to light Fox News' water-carrying role for the Bush administration. He was one whose point-of-view journalism exposed and put exclamation points on the problems in the political operation disguised as news network model embraced by the guys across the street at Fox. Now, weirdly, once again, it is Keith who is illustrating the difference between what he does on TV, what we do here at MSNBC, and what goes on across the street.
Okay. Now, she is speaking there. She is speaking directly to Jon Stewart. I mean, not directly. She is speaking to those who would basically say, and I think she called it bullpucky. It's bullshit. But it is a very facile comparison between Fox and MSNBC. It's not the same, not in terms of content. Whether you agree or disagree with a conservative or a liberal perspective, the difference is the process is different. They fundamentally see themselves in a different arena within a different agenda than they do at Fox. It's just a fundamentally different process and makes it a, even if it appears to be the same, which I don't think it does upon scratching the surface. Now, I will say this. At Air America, what we did was more like Fox in terms of process. I would fundraise for candidates. We started with Marcos that whole fighting Dems thing. I would have a different Democratic vet on for each week. I think we did this for 25 weeks. Jim Webb, his first national appearance as a primary candidate. Sestak was on our show. What's his name? Eric Massey. Eric Massa. Listen, they can't all be winners. But the point being, that's what we did. I still got it.
Wait a sec. Oh, no. Will you turn on my 360?
It's on.
I can't hear it. Did it play?
Did not. It should be on. All right, do it again.
There we go. The reason why that cash register is on my, because at one point somebody said, hey, are we going to get in trouble with election laws if you say give money? I had an Act Blue account for Majority Report. And we would actively raise money. And then when I realized, like, oh, yeah, we could, I don't know. I have no idea. We had no, you know, there was no adults at Air America. And in conservative talk radio, where a lot of these guys had come from, they actually had, you know, they had just come from, like, I don't know, Spanish or sports talk radio. They knew nothing about anything. But nobody even asked that question on Sean Hannity's program. Hey, what are we doing? Is it patently illegal? That's all right. And so I just started saying, like, hey, candidate, I have no idea how people could help you. I don't know any way that you would have know if our listeners liked you. That's what I would do. So at Air America, we were like that. We were open to that criticism. I think that our content was different in that we would actually do true stories. We wouldn't fabricate things. I think that's just a difference between sort of a liberal and a conservative sensibility. The ends does not always justify the means. Now, I happen to be a guy who pushes that. I don't lie, but I also am not willing to unilaterally disarm for some greater societal good that will not actually come about. I can't come up with an example off the top of my head, but maybe we'll talk about the filibuster reform. You know, at least the dynamic comes up there. But that's not the case at MSNBC. Certainly not the case with Rachel, and it's certainly not, it's just simply not the case. It's not, Fox is a wing of the Republican Party, period. Half of their lineup are presidential candidates. They constantly raise money. They constantly put stuff, it's to create an equivalency in terms of those two, I hesitate to call, I guess you could call, media outlets, and I use that term loosely. I guess media is media, right? Everything's, they're both media outlets. They're not both news operations. One is opinion journalism. The other one is simply a propaganda wing for a party that throws in some news occasionally so it looks like they're actually a news station. There's a fundamental difference there. And Rachel does very well in pointing that out. And she's not addressing, I can tell you, she's not addressing Rush Limbaugh. She's not addressing people at the National Review. She's addressing Jon Stewart. She's addressing Howie Kurtz. She's addressing the centrist, liberal-leaning people who have a problem with people who are passionate. If you are passionate about politics, there's no difference between Sean Hannity and Keith Olbermann. Period. They're both passionate about politics. That's where you draw the line. If you're too passionate about politics, you don't have the ability to step back and say, hey, at least I'm not getting screwed. Right? That's what that means. You don't see poor people saying, don't get too involved in that. It's just untoward. No, they say, I don't have time to get involved in that because I got to work. But they don't look down their nose upon and judge just basically there's passion on both sides. They're equal. That's the same. They both have passion. And this brought up, I had been having conversation with people about this Jon Stewart rally. And I watched the whole thing. And I think it was Alon James who tweeted a point about he went down to that rally and saw that there wasn't a lot of black people at the rally, 200,000 people. I know for a fact there was more than there was at the Glenn Beck rally because I was at the Glenn Beck rally. And you can actually, there's a YouTube up. I assume everybody has seen it. But I saw more people on the TV. Just in the TV shots. But his point was, I don't know if liberals can knock conservatives for not having a lot of black people at the rally. I was at that rally, and there were some, but there was not a lot of black people at this liberal rally. And I tweeted back, first off, this was not a liberal rally. Any more than a fish concert is a liberal rally. There may be more liberals there, but that's not why they're gathering there. And I would also argue it wasn't a rally. A rally has an ask of the people who attend. Get psyched up. We're going to beat North High. Get psyched up. We're going to kick their butts. Get psyched up. Go out and vote. Go and volunteer. Go become a candy striper. Go do something. A rally, by definition, has an ask of its attendees. What was Jon Stewart's ask? Even at the post rally conference, do you think people should go out and vote? People should do what moves them. Are you effing kidding me? You can't even tell people to vote? And his serious speech. Now listen, I first judged this as a comedian because I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt on this. I think it's sort of bull, but I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. He's just a comedian. I do know that number one job for him is to have it be funny. And if he can't communicate an idea and have it be funny, he's not going to do it on his show. Fair enough. Fair enough. The rally was not funny. Colbert's stuff was funny. Because Colbert is actually parodying something. I don't know what, you know, this is one of those things like where you make a joke on TV and it's funny. We're going to have a rally to restore sanity. That's a funny joke in the context after Beck. His was to restore honor. I'm going to make a joke about Beck, rally, restore. That's where it should have ended. Instead of like, hey, we should do that. Yeah, we should do that. Oh, shit, did I say that on air? Oh, now we got to do it. Oh, damn. Colbert's was funny because he's actually satirizing something. How does Jon Stewart satirize a rally that you're holding a rally? How do you satirize it? The only thing I saw that was remotely good in that respect was they put two guys in the crowd and shot it two different ways to give a different perception. And there he's satirizing media coverage and the way that that can be manipulated. Good. Everything else, bunk. I didn't get the peace train thing back and forth. It was just completely, the joke was very muddled. And then he gave his serious speech. And I will tell you this now. Short of one or two phrases, Glenn Beck could have given the exact same speech. And I think did. You know, he should have focused, if he was going to do that, he was faced with a choice. Do I actually stand up for something? That was more of a protest. The media is bad. Okay, yeah, we got that. That's why we watch your show. The media is bad. Why are you saying this at a rally? How does that you know, further a comedic premise? That was really more of a protest. We're out here protesting how bad the media is. There should have been more comedy and less comity. Right? His serious speech, honestly, was just like full of like, yeah, we need to be nicer and blah, blah, blah. And I wasn't even going to talk about this because it was irrelevant. It happened a week and a half ago. But Benjamin and I started talking about it, and then Rachel addressed this false equivalency thing that was the premise of that rally. And then I saw this Bill Maher piece, and this is the best thing that Bill Maher has said, I think, in ages. And I like that Bill Maher has come out as a more or less, sort of identifies as a liberal now. He used to identify himself as a libertarian. And I think he sort of either grew up a little bit, realized it was just crap. You know, his only problem is he's still sort of obsessed with Muslims. Still has a little Muslim problem. But, you know, be that as it may, nobody's perfect. But listen to this from Bill Maher. He just goes directly at Olbermann Colbert. Now, listen. You know, he can afford to do it. And this is a very weird time on the left. Nobody really quite knows. I'm on all these email lists, and I'll tell you, the sniping and the arguing, and it's not just blame game. It's like, where do we go forward from here? And I think there is, you know, people have to start the idea of maintaining a certain distance from this stuff. It's not working. It didn't work for Obama. I mean, that's the thing. That's why I think why Rachel says this piece and directs it towards Stewart and Colbert, Stewart in particular, and why Bill Maher comes out and does this. It's not just because there was a rally. That rally had taken place 6 months ago. There wouldn't have been any type of criticism for it. But the point is, it was very close to get out the vote. It took up a lot of the oxygen. It didn't change anything. But Stewart represents that same mentality, at least that people attribute to Obama, of this notion of it's about process. I can move to Washington and I can heal the process. And the result is secondary. The ideology is secondary. It's the passion on both sides that's problematic here. That Washington is a bad place because people argue. And we can't move forward if people argue. As if that's not part and parcel of politics. As if that is some type of disqualifier for the argument. The very fact that you're arguing is disqualifies your argument. You're both wrong. It takes two to tango. This is what you tell five-year-olds who are debating over, you know, whether or not it's their turn to use the swing set. But in grown-up land, in Realityville, it makes a big difference if the Social Security age is raised to 70. It makes a huge difference. If you're 55 years old and you've lost your job, you're not going to get another one unless you're talking about going to flip hamburgers. You're eligible at 62 now. You get full benefits at 67. If you bump that up to 70, that makes a huge difference in whether or not you're actually going to be able to buy food. Your savings are going to carry you for 3 or 4 years. You've been working for all your life. You're not going to get another job. If you're digging ditches, if you're working in manual labor, if you're working in a factory, it makes a huge difference. And to say, well, that argument is disqualified because you're showing too much passion about it. Every person who utters that word or has that philosophy will not suffer at the hands of the outcome. For them, it is like the results of a football game. Of course, you don't hear people saying, I think there's something broken with football. Because the guys who root for the Patriots... Oh, did the Patriots win yesterday? Guys who root for the Patriots, the guys who root for the Chargers, they're just arguing too much. They're too angry. They're too passionate about it. I mean, if any place in society where we should say, like, yeah, there's too much passion, it would be about meaningless crap like that. Now, don't get me wrong. At various times, I'm more or less passionate about it. Having a kid and a fairly demanding wife has destroyed my capacity to be involved in anything that I cannot at least justify is somehow related to my profession. Truth be told, I was reading this much politics when I was directing Gary Busey, but that was an escapism for me. But this notion, it is time, essentially, to pick a side. This notion that somehow we can fix Washington by making there not be arguments, that ship has sailed. It sailed, frankly, it sailed 8 years ago, 10 years ago. It actually sailed probably in 1995 or 94. Sometime around Newt Gingrich, sometime around Bill Clinton, impeach Bill Clinton, even though he was the most Republican Democratic president that we'd seen up until that point. That ship had sailed.
I think the Patriots lost.
You're kidding! There's something broken with football! You are kidding me!
Bring it down a little bit, son.
There's something. Get the commissioner of football on. If you send me to football, I will repair this. There'll be no more fighting. So let's play this Bill Maher piece because he talks a little bit about the media equivalency, but now he jumps right in and he says, look, there is a fundamental problem with this equivalency of the right and the left, which has been a theme that he's been pushing lately. He said to Rahane's, what's that guy's name? Rahane, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I saw that episode, I think it was like a week or two ago, and I've talked to Rahane. He's actually a nice guy, and he's actually he is very, very
passionate.
He is passionate, but he's also very intellectually rigorous, or likes to think he is. And I think he does make an effort to that. He's not like But Bill Maher just basically, you know, the problem is if you're one of those guys, you know, who wants to maintain some type of intellectual integrity to conservatism. The problem is that you got to look, you know, I'm sorry. The reason why you have the ability to go on TV and the reason why you're being paid to do what you're doing is all on the backs of Rush Limbaugh and Ann Coulter and every other nut job that you claim you're not. The only reason why you're allowed to go on TV, the only reason why you're supported in this process is because they have made a cottage industry out of this. They are the band, you know, just like you would say, if Islam was in fact actually not 90%, you know, not 99.999% not extremist. In other words, you know, the notion that you get up and say, like, where are the imams coming, calling for moderation? Dude, based on the numbers of Muslims who are not extremists versus the numbers of conservatives who are not extremists, if you are not an extremist conservative, the only thing out of your mouth ever should be preaching moderation to your fellow conservatives. And by that, I don't mean the only thing when you're on TV. I mean ever. Like, I don't think you should be able to order a cheeseburger without saying, please, conservatives, be more moderate. Pickles, lettuce, and I will have the Colby cheese. Would you like a drink with that? Only if conservatives become more moderate would I would like a, let me try one of those Arnold Palmers. The only thing out of your mouth should be to preach moderation. And so Bill Maher just basically threw in his face, tell me one conservative who has ever, one liberal has ever called for secession, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And he just, and Rahan just lost it at one point. He was just like, so angry. How dare you treat me as if I was a liberal and you were a conservative? How dare you put me in that box that liberals have been put in both directly and indirectly for years? And he lost it. And then it just like that, all that sort of like intellectual rigor and I'm going to stay above the fray went right out the window, didn't it? And the thing is, he's not quite his game. He didn't have an A game when it comes to that. So it was sort of lame. But here's Bill Maher making a comment about Jon Stewart because, I mean, ultimately, look, I don't know where this show is going to head in what directions and whatnot. But I can tell you that for me, I really do believe that there is an argument that for those of us who want progressive change, for those of us who want a populistic change, not a nativistic, not a nationalistic, but one that is more people-oriented, where decisions are made, where success is defined as a larger middle class as opposed to a larger GDP. Where success in healthcare is defined as full coverage, inexpensive care for the greatest number of people, maybe at the expense of a machine that is available only to princes who come from Saudi Arabia. There are different definitions of success here. I can see where someone would say, we want a healthcare system where princes from Saudi Arabia will come here. Okay, that's great. But that doesn't help the vast majority of American people. The vast, 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 vast majority of American people. And I'm willing to trade that. Yeah, it's very sad that the Prince of Saudi Arabia now goes to Britain for now, and he very well may already go there. But what's also not sad is the fact that people have to go to India to get their teeth fixed from this country, that there is no more medical tourism. There are different definitions of success. And I believe for those of us who believe in that definition of success, that the aggregate good, that it's a difference between median and average, right? Which is which? Do you know? Evan, you know, right?
Median is the value that's in the middle. Average is it's the average. Is the
median is the value that's in the middle. So which is the one that has to do with...
The middle value. So the...
I think people... You're not describing it well. It's a bunch of English majors in this room. Dorsey doesn't even know what I'm talking about. Dorsey doesn't even know what the two questions are. Twitter. The point being that Bill Gates and I could be in this room and our average, right?
Yeah.
Our average income would be somewhere like $1 billion, right? We'd each have $1 billion. But the median would be closer to...
Be lower.
Be lower. Yeah. Well, I guess you'd need a third person,
right? Yeah,
you'd need
a third person.
All right. Well, if the three of us were in here, you know, you get my point. I'm more interested in the median. The aggregate value to the median as opposed to the average. And for those of us who have that disposition, which I think probably a lot of people listening to this program do, I'm not convinced that the establishment liberals... that the moneyed liberals, not all liberals with money, but a certain class of people, are more dangerous of an enemy, or I should say a greater obstacle to achieving reform than the lunatics on the right. Because the lunatics on the right expose themselves. But these people, they... walk a tightrope where they maintain their career at the expense of these values. But here's Bill Maher attacking Jon Stewart.
But the message of the rally, as I heard it, was that if the media would just stop giving voice to the crazies on both sides, then maybe we could restore sanity. It was all nonpartisan and urged cooperation with the moderates on the other side, forgetting that Obama tried that and found out there are no moderates on the other side. When John announced his rally, he said that the national conversation is dominated by people on the right who believe Obama's a socialist and people on the left who believe 9/11 was an inside job. But I can't name any Democratic leaders who think 9/11 was an inside job. But Republican leaders who think Obama's a socialist? All of them. McCain, Boehner, Cantor, Palin, all of them. It's now official Republican dogma, like tax cuts pay for themselves and gay men just haven't met the right woman. As another example of both sides using overheated rhetoric, John cited the right equating Obama with Hitler and the left calling Bush a war criminal. Except thinking Obama is like Hitler is utterly unfounded. But thinking Bush is a war criminal? That's the opinion of General Anthony Tugaboo, who headed the Army's investigation into Abu Ghraib. Republicans... You see, Republicans keep staking out a position that is further and further right, and then demand Democrats meet them in the middle, which is now not the middle anymore. That's the reason health care reform is so watered down. It's Bob Dole's old plan from 1994. Same thing with cap and trade. It was the first President Bush's plan to deal with carbon emissions. Now the Republican plan for climate change is to claim it's a hoax.
So, I mean, there you have it. And good for Bill Maher. I'm actually really interested to see if Jon Stewart will respond. You know, I don't regularly watch that show. Because usually the best clips are on the computer. But it will be interesting to see if he responds to it. You know, I don't know if he's just... You know, I think to a certain extent, look, I'm sorry, but, you know, he may or may not be that guy who wanted to do that rally and never thought it would come to this. But, you know, it's like Charles Barkley saying, like, I'm not a role model. You know what, dude? Sorry, you are. There actually is... just a little bit more, there's a reason why The guy playing basketball down the street, the outdoor park, is not being paid $10 million a year to do it. You may be better than him, but you're not $10 million better than him. You are a persona. There is part of that that comes with that. When I write a script for a network, I get significantly more than I get for cable. It's not that the script is any, the script is worse, almost definitionally. So I'm paying for all the other crap that I got to put up with. And Jon Stewart is not the highest rated show on Comedy Central. Have I told you guys this? Yes. What's the highest rated show on Comedy Central?
That would have been my guess.
South Park.
Wrong. Want to take another guess? You will guess all day.
The Mind of Mencia?
You will guess all day. You will not get it. I don't even know if you guys have even heard of the show. It gets 2 to 3 times the ratings that Jon Stewart does. Tosh 2.0. It is America's funniest videos, but he just plays YouTubes.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's funny or not. I've never seen it. I don't care. The reason why you all think that Jon Stewart's show is the highest rated show, and it is, in fact, the highest advertising generator, generates advertising for the entire thing, it's because he talks about politics. It's because he has a show that brings on journalists, and he's talking about a conversation. He's having an ongoing conversation. He is a big player in an ongoing conversation within our society. Politics. It is a very big and increasingly large portion of our media is dedicated to politics. And that's part of the price of admission. You're going to go in there. Do you have to take a position? Yes, and he took it. And my position is there's no difference. And so he should be judged upon that. And, you know, that's been indicative of his show always. Janine and I were having these same arguments 6 years ago. That doesn't mean that he's a force for not goodness or evil. it doesn't mean anything. It's just that's the reality. These people need to have a very clear understanding of what the reality is. And there needs to be, at times, you know, 250,000 signatures so far for this Olbermann suspension. Somebody's just built a very nice email list. Is that the reason why they did it? No. Not the only reason. Is it a reason? Yes. That's fine. Because it also, in my estimation, probably has protected Olbermann significantly. You can't have a network where like 500,000 viewers is a massive hit and then have 250,000 people in 3 days sign up to say like we support this guy. You can't justify that to your Uber bosses. Now, when my show went off air, I think I had like 20 I have a large email list. People over the years sending in save the show. I think the morons at Air America saw that and they were like, ugh, this is what's wrong with Sam. Honestly, I have that book. I got to bring it in of like the 8,000 signatures that were collected by Brave New Films like in 3 days and they delivered it in a big stack. And literally it was just like, this is the problem, Cedar. What? How is this a problem? Oh, I know. You guys are fucking morons. But I don't think they're that dumb at MSNBC. In fact, I know they're not. And I think that sending that shot across the bow, 250,000, this is the bread and butter of MSNBC. Those are the people who show up every day. And I think that has made this a moot issue over there. I think it really has made it a moot issue. And so my point being that it's important for us to really have a sense of like who is our ally, to what extent are they our ally, when are we getting played, and when are we giving people a free pass? And I've spent more time on this than I wanted to. We're going to go a little long today because there's a couple of stories I just wanted that continue on with this theme. This is from the AP. GOP to use debt cap as leverage to push spending cuts. Now, either the AP is bullshitting us, or we're getting... like, I'm in a very cynical mood, folks. I should tell you this right now. In terms of the Democrats, I'm in a very, very cynical mood. And it's not a helpful one, and I'm not exactly sure what to do with it. But let me tell you something right now. The GOP has no leverage when it comes to the debt cap. Zero. Zero. If the Republican Party stands in the way of us raising our debt ceiling, if a Republican stands in the way of our raising our debt ceiling and we default on our obligations and the world's economy plunges, they're going to be fucked. Forever. So they have no leverage. That means they have no leverage. So the idea that somehow they're going to leverage this by demanding major spending cuts, you know what that suggests to me? That suggests to me that there are members of the Democratic Party who are legislators, or there is a, or the Obama administration has no problem in abiding by this fiction where the Republicans have leverage. You know, I am getting very, very worried at the notion that by late 2011, we're going to go into austerity mode. Cuts in spending, raising of Social Security, that could happen in a month or two. Following Britain off a cliff. Now, you know who's going to be fine if there's austerity measures? Really rich people. Do you know who's not going to be? Everyone else. We need to attack this notion of austerity measures working, which it don't. They don't. Which everyone knows they don't. But they have a political resonance. And we need to be very, very vigilant now when we see stuff like this and know what's going on. If the Democrats in the Senate or the House or the administration concede that they have leverage. We needed to do this because they were going to stand in the way of our raising our debt ceiling. They are lying to you. They're lying to you. We're up against our debt ceiling limit of 14.3. Understand, it was raised six times, I think, under the Bush administration. From like 4 or 5 trillion up to well over 10 trillion. If you hear a Democrat say they will not allow us to raise the debt ceiling unless we do X, Y, or Z, they are lying to you. You know they are lying to you. When you hear Gibbs, the GOP, McClatchy, there'll be no compromise on tax cuts. Now, look. Economically speaking, there's an argument that tax cuts may help people who make less than $250,000 in terms of stimulating the economy. There's an argument to be made there. The argument doesn't work over $250,000. See Moody's analysts, not the bond rating, analysts, where they do a study. What do rich people do when they get tax cuts? Do they spend that money and stimulate the economy? No. They buy investments that have no stimulative effect. I don't even think the tax breaks for under 250 would make a significant difference in terms of stimulus, but whatever. From politically, I can see why you would want that. But I heard Gibbs the other day saying, we are not going to compromise one iota on making these tax cuts permanent. What? Permanent? That's not the issue. No, the issue is that if you do nothing, if the Senate does nothing, if the House does nothing, the tax cuts go away. Because these were not tax cuts. This was a tax moratorium on a certain percentage of tax cuts for a certain period of time. There was a sunset provision. If they do nothing, it goes away. And the Democrats have allowed it to be framed this way. Why? You tell me. They're going to kick the can down the road. There's going to be a two-year extension on all the Bush tax cuts. And what's going to happen in 2 years? Do you think there's going to be one more Democratic legislator than there is now? Not even close. It's almost inconceivable that we would retain the Senate with 21 seats up. 21 Democratic seats, 10 Republican seats, if I remember correctly, more or less. So, you know, and this is one of those occasions where it's like, you know what? You got to lose some battles, but you have to go down swinging. You have to retain. You want to let the Republicans try and block the raising the debt ceiling? Let their Republican buddies sweat it out. I can assure you, their investments are in just as much jeopardy as any Democratic ones. You'll see John Boehner get off that golf course mighty quick. Please raise the debt ceiling. My golf membership is a... Orange is not cheap. Reid says he's going to pass the DREAM Act. Maybe we'll talk about that tomorrow. Or he did before the election. A big argument about the filibuster. You know, I'm going to save this for tomorrow because the filibuster is not... the best is, the final one is now the Obama administration floating Melissa Bean. Not just a blue dog, like just a full-on corporatist. To head the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. I mean, this is like, seriously. Seriously. Wolf guarding the hen house, is that what it is? It's not, I mean, it's worse than that. It's like, forget the hen house. Let's just have a slaughterhouse. We could raise them and slaughter them simultaneously. Bean. Bill Press said Russ Feingold lost this because he was too much of a purist and he should have taken PAC money. Maybe. That's maybe. There may have been some truth to that, but what are you going to do? It's reported that possible Bean nomination won't sit well with reformers. Yeah. That would be an incredibly dispiriting signal. I mean, I think that makes it really, really clear where Obama is. She was the vice chair of the Blue Dog Coalition. She was, according to ProPublica, a critical player in the group's efforts to weaken the overhaul of the financial services industry. This is before the election, before anybody even talked about her. I mean, it's so impossible. Jane Hampshire has a good breakdown of some facts. Voters in 2010 election thought the economy was the most important issue of virtually every poll. Fact, when asked who was to blame for the state of the economy, number one answer was the banks. Fact, Republicans won 56% of swing voters who blame banks. If you had any doubt that our government is basically in the pockets of these financial industry, Melissa Bean would, if you have any doubt, which would be hard to, at this point, should completely, the notion they're even floating her, you know, and maybe they float her to bring in somebody who is less egregious, but equally, you know, but at the end of the day, equally egregious. But Glenn Greenwald, I guess, on Democracy Now, before the election, was talking about Elizabeth Warren's appointment as special advisor to Tim Geithner to help set up the Consumer Financial Protection Agency. He said, once the election's over, they can find somebody more pleasing to Wall Street. Well, he gets a cookie. This is when we should have outro music. We're not totally there. So let's just do this. We will be back tomorrow, same time, 11:30. And if you stick around, we're going to have our overtime, which will be IMs. Because, you know, ultimately, this IM thing we may have on video, and it may be part of a premium subscriber package.
So tune in tomorrow, same time, 11:30 a.m. The podcast will be up 20 minutes after I'm done talking. In the future, when this part goes to video only, the podcast will be up 20 minutes after I'm done. So we've just about got this down, folks. We're only 3-4 days into this, and this is running like a well-oiled machine. Unfortunately, without any fuel. That's the only downside on that. Okay, so if you want to IM me, you can do so at Majority FM. You can IM me. Dorsey, Evan, if you guys have any questions on anything I talked about today, if you have any questions that are unrelated to, like, hey, when are we ever going to have a payday? What's any questions that are not meta, like not navel gazy, not like, hey, when are we going to get on this or when are we going to get on that? It's something else. I can't even find my, where's my IM thing? Wait, I keep, my CyberDoc looks too much like my Adium thing. That's a problem. There we go. Let's see. Okay, Nefer. Getting married is a topic normal at age 5. We're referring back to Mila's obsession with getting married. Randy said the same exact thing on her show on Friday, being the same what happened to her on her Friday show. Yes. Who is more demanding, Gary Busey or your wife? Well, that's a good question. That's a good question. Gary Busey, of course. Gary Busey is marginally more crazy than my wife. Please introduce us to Dorsey and Evan. Well, Dorsey, do you want to say hello? Dorsey.
I am Dorsey.
Dorsey was part of the video group at Air America. Well, you were like the vice chair of the website at the end, right?
Yeah, something like that. I was one of the editors on the website towards the end of things, but overall I was the video content manager. So whenever the stream went down or you couldn't see anything in the booth, it was my fault.
That was almost always.
Yes. Yes.
No, that does not. Well, we are not letting Dorsey deal with any of the technical stuff. Fortunately, right now Evan is dealing with the technical stuff.
Hi,
Evan. Do you want to tell people? Do you want to let the cat out of the bag? Because this is gonna make you a rock star.
I don't know.
Dorsey can fill in afterwards too, because you got the roomie thing going. Oh, yeah. This is gonna make you a rock star on this show.
That might be your cat to let out of the bag there, Sam.
Well, Evan, Evan came to my attention because Dorsey and Evan are you guys are roommates?
Yep.
How's that working over there? It's like a Three's Company situation, isn't it?
Reverse
a reverse Three's Company. Because Evan is romantically involved, if I can put it that way, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
With Lauren. Yes, that Lauren. I don't know if we ever said her name on air. I don't know the last name. But where's my horns? I can't even remember. Oh, that's right. Lauren of Sam Cedar Show and Cedar on Sundays fame.
You know, she asked me this morning if the cat had yet gotten out of the bag.
Well, the cat's out of the bag now, Lauren. I know she's streaming it live right now. Happy now. Any way to listen live on the iPhone? We're going to work on it. Oh, she got it on her iPhone. How did you do that? Happy now. Email me. Tell me how you got it. I guess you just clicked to the link. That's sweet.
Nice.
Kier Kaufman, you're likely aware of this, but the stream feed isn't going through anything at 11:38. Lucy, daughter of the devil. Oh, now it's back on. Personally, I was aiming at the rally for sanity until Stewart declared that it wasn't going to be political. What's the point? At a minimum, Stewart should have stood up for sanity. Right. Being getting off her ass is getting informed and voting. What's so comical is that every conservative nowadays sounds like Jonathan Crohn. It's our principles. Yes, that's true. You know Jonathan Crohn? It's like that 14-year-old guy who wrote the book, who became the hero of... who.
Remember him at CPAC? Oh, man.
I don't think I saw him at CPAC, but I remember he was there. I mean, this guy... I don't know. It's not nice to say that he's going to end up like, like, see, just like in a fetal position in some motel somewhere, just sort of completely just strung out on meth or something and doing all sorts of horrible acts to get money to get meth. Plexiglass involved in this. Principles. One thing I've noticed is that conservatives now use the term principle. Of course. Of course. Now, you understand that the Republicans now, this is the beauty. This is the interesting thing that's happening. Beauty. When Republicans are out of power, when they don't have complete control, they always talk about principles. They allow their Frankensteins to run wild. You know, remember, it was a problem during immigration reform when they were in power. But when they're not in power, they'll let it run wild because it's not going to stand in the way of policy. They totally understand this. You know, that's the only, look, the only silver lining about the idea that we're getting played by a lot of Democrats, we're getting played by the Obama administration, is that they're getting played on the right as well. But there's really no consolation because we're all just effed. You know, the real breakdown is... And it's I've got to figure out a better way of saying this because I don't think that having money necessarily is the problem, but it is a big part of the problem. There is a money no money divide that is problematic, and it is, you know, that's a facile and easy generalization to make because. You almost having money is a prerequisite to having this attitude and this worldview that is detrimental to the majority of people. But it isn't necessarily a disqualifying problem. You know, I'm a big fan of Spitzer's. It's politics. Let's keep it there. I'm going to be on Parker Spitzer, actually, tomorrow night, Wednesday night. A big fan of his politics. And I think he's one of those guys who, you know, really, really felt that my being rich, my having these advantages, was created an obligation for me, for people who are less fortunate. For people who didn't have the same type of power. I mean, I played golf the first time in like 4 years the other day with a buddy of mine. And he had a third guy come. And the third guy was, afterwards I said to my friend, I mean, he was a nice guy, but I said, that guy like strikes me as like, it's like playing golf with Robert Rubin. He goes, oh, actually he works at Citigroup. And I had just seen Client 9, the documentary, and was talking about it. And this guy was just like, hated Spitzer. Why? Why do you hate him? Do you know how he treated Whitehead? And I guess Whitehead was like the head of some, I don't know what it was. Well, it was some major, I can't off the top of my head. He wasn't the AIG president. I don't know. I don't know exactly. He was one of these guys that Spitzer went after. And apparently Spitzer called him. After Whitehead was being investigated and wrote an editorial in the Washington Post. And Spitzer called him.
Goldman Sachs.
Spitzer called him and said, you know, basically yelled into the phone. They asked him about this conversation on Client 9. They asked him about the conversation. And Spitzer was a little bit embarrassed, but he said, yeah, I did it. I don't know if I said those exact words, but certainly something to that effect, which is basically, like, I'm going to effing nail you to the wall, you freaking, you know, piece of crap. What do you think? You know, blah, blah, blah. And this guy was like, Can you imagine speaking to a man like that? Whitehead is a nice man. And, you know, and I'm like, what are you? Is this some type of like, is it like Ashton Kutcher going to come out now and be like, we got you. We knew once you played golf, we would nail you. Are you serious? Are you four? Do you think that every... would we be having this conversation if that guy was a drug runner? If that guy was a black guy who had done anything wrong? I mean, short of any other white-collar criminal, I suppose you could have, you, obviously you could have a black, white collar criminal, but like, you know, like a typical, I mean, like where would this ever come? Would you have this? Like, oh, he owns a cement factory. He owns trash removal. The way you'd talk to him that way. Excuse me. Are you telling me that the head of Goldman Sachs never talked to anybody that way? And then on top of that, you know, like you're going to have a problem with a prosecutor using that intimidation as a quiver in his, as an arrow in his quiver. You have a problem with that. Like, you don't want him to walk into that interrogation room and use intimidation. It's you were so impolite to that suspect. And then the other thing, and I said to him, I said, look, you know, here's the deal. If you have the ability, when you are charged with something, to rebut that charge on the editorial page of the Washington Post, or was it the Wall Street Journal, wherever it was, if you have that kind of power, you are immediately disqualified from somebody calling you on the phone and being mean to you. I'm sorry. If you have that type of power, which is available to virtually no one in the country, I am going to put political pressure on Spitzer to not chase me down because I have access to one of the largest newspapers in the country, so I can put an article there that I can just write whatever I want to write. And you have the audacity to complain that he called me on the phone and was mean, trying to intimidate me. And that's the mentality that these people have. That is the mentality. And I see a guy like Spitzer who's going after those people, and you look, was it a coincidence that he was hot on the trail of people who were destroying our country with financial shenanigans that he gets taken down from this? No, of course not. No, there was unprecedented going after a guy for being a giant. Was it hypocritical on his part? Yes. Should he have resigned? I actually think that, you know, because of his role as attorney general before, that it was impossible for him not to. Was that dug up for political reasons and for financial reasons? Yes, absolutely. And I think he would say the same thing. And so I have a tremendous amount of respect, and I don't, when I say that this is a problem between the rich and those of us who are just sort of like average. And I'm not talking, you know, if you make $250,000 a year, even if you do it outside of New York City, I don't think that you're necessarily, I don't think anybody necessarily, you know, I think there is we need a better term for it, obviously. Because too many people are aspirational, but well, I'm going to be rich, or I think I am rich, or my dad's rich. My dad's not evil. He bought me things. but we do have a problem. And so, you know, I don't remember where we're going with that. But this is the after show, so it doesn't matter. I don't need a point. Oh, Kirk Kaufman posted a YouTube of Jonathan Crone. I'm so tempted to do like a colitis or Crohn's joke, but I have a buddy who's got it. It's a little more sensitive. Okay, Smitty's now listening live. I quit listening to Randy when she started spouting 9/11 truth or bullshit, says Phrase 98. What truth or bullshit did she spout? I don't know.
I wasn't aware of that, but, I mean, they would know.
I believe it was a hologram that got me fired from Air America. I mean, you know, I think there is, I still have questions about 9/11. Yeah, I think it's foolish not to have questions about 9/11. I mean, do we even really know what happened with Pearl Harbor? I mean, we do now. Do we know for sure now that FDR knew that it was coming or had some advance warning or? But even beyond the generic, there are issues. I think that it was not a coincidence that the day that 9/11 happened was also the day that we were having drills. Does that mean that there was someone in our government who tipped off somebody? No, but you got to remember,
Bin Laden used to work for the U.S. government. And it's not like you go in and like, hey, it's me, it's Osama. I'm going to take my punch card. Bing, bing. And now we took away your magnetic strip so you can't come back into the country. That doesn't work that way. The way it works is like there's all these intermediaries who are shuttling funds back and forth through the CIA. The CIA is not like, hey, I'm a member of the CIA. Here's my card. CIA. No. There's probably exponentially more sort of just like independent contractors who work for the CIA than actually get their check from the U.S. government. And those guys, sometimes they work for the CIA. Sometimes they work for who the hell knows. And it's not like you lose all your connections and, you know, not like you wouldn't know where to look. Hey, where's the drill? Oh, that's not top secret. You know, I mean, it just the idea that there was absolutely like no connection is different from saying like there was somebody willfully orchestrating this. It's just different. What I think the truth is that there was an incredible lack of caring and there was a tremendous amount of incompetence. And then you can start getting into like, you know, is there willful incompetence? I don't know. And what does that even mean? You know, everybody's making a cost-benefit analysis at any given point. Do we need to pay attention to the chance that we may get attacked? No. Why? How many can they kill? How many people can they kill? You know, it's like this. It's like, hey, I don't know how many times the conversation comes up in the course of doing stuff like this, but it's like, hey, can we do this? What if they sue us? What if they sue us? That's the best thing that could ever happen to us. You know, that's the cost-benefit analysis you make. You doing it so they sue us? No. We're doing it because we're doing it. That's their agenda. They sue us? Gravy. Do I think somebody in the Bush administration ever said, it would be gravy if we got attacked because it would give us... Probably not in those words. That's a far less sophisticated way of saying it. Themenserstirp. It's not just a false equivalency. The idea that the left and right operate similarly. It's also the notion that they represent positions that are equal distance from the truth. Yes. Right. Well, that's what we were saying. Rachel talked about the false equivalency in terms of the process. And Bill Maher talked about the false equivalency. You know, truth, I don't know, what does truth mean? Sanity, rationality, goodness. It's not just the, they are clearly, truth. They're clearly not, especially when the right is literally fabricating information outright, lying, misinformed. Yes, that's true too, yes. Rusty, I just found out you're broadcasting again by your IM. That's why I'm doing a show right now when I log on to my IM and my chat thing. Oh, yeah, this is, so folks, I'd pay for a subscription, Sam. Will you write down the name Rusty Cole? Folks, if you want to help me, now we're still in soft launch, so I'm not really going to go full bore promotion. But if you want to help, there's a couple of things you can do to promote. Stupid, silly things that may or may not help. I mean, Rusty did this. Put on your message. If you don't have a message on your IM, you know, some people do. Most people do not. And I don't know how you go about do it. You put a status message or what? I don't know what. Maybe, Dorsey, you can write up a little thing that we can post. Put on there. Listen to majority.fm every day. That's it. That's all you got to do. Listen to majority.fm every day. And they'll go and they'll find out when the time of the show is and, you know, and they'll listen to the podcast. That would be helpful. Here's another thing you could do. And we have done this with our router, our wireless router. And I've actually got some old routers that don't really work very well, but they broadcast, I think. Put on there, call your router, listen to majority.fm. You can name your router. We have done it. We can do it on anything. You can do, and we're going to set up other routers that aren't going to have an internet thing, but you're just going to broadcast because every day somebody connects to their router.
It's like billboards on the information superhighway.
Right. People are going to drive by your house, and they're going to see. You keep the lock on there, but just, you know, let's do that.
Chris 64 back. Great that you're back on. Good stuff. Thank you. Lobos, hey Sam, why is it okay for Stewart to play a Fox clip of hypocrisy and then make a funny face? But when MSNBC does it without the joke, they're being too partisan. So much of what MSNBC is just to point out Fox BS. You know, I don't think that's the part that he has a problem with. I think he has a problem more like the special commentary, like when they, you know, like when people take a strident ideological position, Stewart has a problem with it. I mean, you know, look, I wasn't brought on Colbert's show with my book because it was too comedic. And it's a hard thing for him to do, or theoretically. I think there was some concern there. On Stewart, I wasn't brought on. Look, my book sold more than a lot of his books. I mean, not his books. Than books by people who've been on that show. Books sold, I don't know, nearly 20,000 copies. It's not a huge amount, but it's not, it's not
significant.
It's a relatively significant amount.
It's not Rick Sanchez's
book. Yeah, Rick Sanchez says sell a lot.
No, apparently I don't know. I saw something. Somebody looked up his Amazon rating. I think he sold like 400 books or something like that.
It's well, you can't tell from Amazon, but
I forget. Somebody did something.
But the point is that. So that wasn't the disqualification. It was done by a massive, you could buy it in airports for like 2 weeks. It was a massive publishing house. They thought it was going to be big, HarperCollins. And of course, Air America stepped on it with their stupid book before, that came out like 3 weeks before, whatever. You know, it's like, well, we got to push the brand. There's no point in pushing our talent. Right, you're all geniuses. Be that as it may, I think it was just too partisan. I mean, I think it just made him uncomfortable. Because there's also a certain, you know, I mean, I know John enough that in 2004, when we were holding our thing at the Ars Nova Theater, and I walked outside, and Stewart was out there taking a break from his election coverage, he saw me, and we talked, and he apologized about the bow tie. Because at that time, I was wearing a bow tie to confuse people, to make them think I was Tucker Carlson. So when I went on TV, people say, like, what happened to that guy with the bow ties? He's liberal now. And he thought I was he's like, I'm sorry about the bow tie thing. And I'm like, dude, it was a costume. That was the last conversation we had. But so it wasn't like, you know, I have no idea who Sam is. And our audience probably, arguably, majority of reported times larger than, no, not arguably. I think definitively, probably back then in particular, was bigger than the Daily Show. You know, we had audiences of up to a million people, I think, on the majority report, maybe more. I mean, at one point we were exploding in New York. And then, of course, we lost our signal and ended up transmitting on tin cans. But be that as it may. Let's see. Welcome back. Gulfstream can't figure out how to log in. Is Gulfstream like the old days? Okay. Oh, there he is. Bill Press is a goober. Kevin, semicolon. Which name do you prefer us to IM you at? This one? Good to hear from you. Doesn't matter. Sam Cedar Show, Majority FM is fine. Doesn't matter. Oh, Nefertiti. Also suggest people post to the Facebook page. Yes. Posting. How do you know how you do that? Like, there's a Majority FM, right? Yeah. Facebook page.
And just post to the wall.
Post to the wall, and does that automatically like it?
No, you have to like it first. There's just a little button that you can click.
I honestly have no idea how to work at Facebook. I have no idea. No idea. No idea. Happy now. Put up a donate button. Did I hear Chris Hedges on Ring of Fire? He's calling for active protests and civil disobedience. Yeah, you know, Hedges, when we were winding down Break Room Live, maybe when we were just hanging out in the office just to piss off people in the building, we'd just come in, get paid, and pick up our check, and Chris Hedges came in, and he was like,
Chinese. We're all. And yeah, he's a pretty dark guy. I think some of what he's saying is true, but we'll see. Just post the show link on Facebook. I'm not exactly sure what that means. But we have a Facebook thing right on the right-hand column, majority.fm. Kirku, principles, bad policies. Oh, set the router's wireless SID to listen to Majority FM. Yes. Thank you. And put your, all of you should be putting your IM status. Listen to Majority FM so that anybody who sees your IM status will listen. Okay, I think Rusty Cole, Air America sucked ass, which is really too bad. It had such promise with talent like you. What are you going to do? I will talk about donations, subscriptions, all that, either tomorrow or Wednesday. Tim Johnson from Chicago. Welcome back. Love the new show. Thank you. Torresi 80. Democrats performed worse with whites on Tuesday than in any congressional election since Second World War. Jerry Brown won Latinos in the governor's race here in California. Is there a way we can clone brown people and spread them across the land? Well, I don't think that's necessary. I mean, the demographically speaking, we're becoming more brown culture. My daughter. And, you know, we're going to be talking about education on this program because I think that's going to become a very big issue. I think Obama's going to try and gut it. My daughter goes to a public school. Granted, it's in Manhattan. And granted, it's in a... You know, every part of Manhattan is wealthy. she goes to... She has, but even at the, you know, even in areas that are not so traditionally wealthy, most public schools or some public schools have these dual language programs. My daughter is in half immersion Spanish right now. Huh. She doesn't even realize it. She just comes home and she's like saying everything in Spanish. You know, like this morning she was like, you know, like, yeah, you want this stuff? No te gusta. No me gusta. It's so wonderful to see your five-year-old daughter being bitchy in Spanish as well as English. So nice that she can retain that level of bitchitudeness and just whininess in a bilingual setting. I can't wait to get to the point where she's talking to me and I don't even know what she's talking about. She comes home, she's singing Spanish songs. It's awesome. Awesome. And it's, I think it's one of the smartest decisions that we ever made. It's, you know, it's going to be a problem because like at one point we're going to have to be doing her homework in Spanish, not just her Spanish homework, but her homework in Spanish, her algebra. I'm not good at algebra. I'm going to be much less good at it in Spanish.
I don't think that's how algebra works.
Oh yeah. I guess that's numbers. Yeah. Well, I mean, word problems.
That's true.
All right. Smart guy. Also suggest people post and post at Majority on your own Facebook page. Yeah. I got to figure out how to do that. Did you hear, Chris? Just post the show link on Facebook, this link. Okay. All right, folks. If there's no more questions, I'm going to go and... did you mention Levin is dropping Don't Ask, Don't... Tell repeal from deaf. No, I didn't. I didn't see that. You gotta be. Why? Because of the president. The president is asking me to do it. Look, we'll talk about it. We got plenty of time to talk about this. But I don't think, unfortunately, a challenge from the left makes sense. I do actually think, and we can talk more about this in the future. I do actually think that if Obama thought Bloomberg was running, that might push him to the left more than anything else.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I know they got to pass it, Phil, but let the Republicans kill it. Todd, my pleasure. Thanks again to Tom Cheevers. LeaveItToCheevers.com for that uncanny John Benjamin impersonation up front.
That was good.
He sent the clean one, too. Now I'm going to have to get Cheevers to actually do stuff like... should we go out on the John Benjamin Has Diarrhea song?
Yes.
Did I even play that second time around? I did, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's just try it. We'll go out on that. Just because I know Benjamin claims he's listening to the show. So. Sorry.